91.3 WLRN presents Topical Currents. We begin this hour with Miami-Dade County government, specifically the Independent Commission on Ethics and Public Trust. When its mission was approved by voters in 1996, it was a rather rare model for municipal governments. Some 20 years later, it's been copied by others. Good afternoon, it's Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper. We'll visit with the Ethics Commission's Executive Director, Joseph Centurino, in minutes. And more, Linda Gassenheimer's annual football tailgating and party advice, featuring a leading local chef. This year, it's Chef Dennis LaBelle of Miami Standard Hotel. He's a big Dolphin and Canes tailgate fan. How does a pro go about it? That's coming up next on Topical Currents after NPR and regional news.
And 7 minutes past 1 o'clock, it is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper and Bonnie Berman on this wet Thursday afternoon.
Although still raining out. The sun's peeking out here at least.
Better than this morning.
Yes.
Well, we begin today's program with a look at Miami-Dade County government, specifically the Commission on Ethics and Public Trust.
The commission was created in 1996 after voter approval. It holds various functions and responsibilities. It can make rulings and fine officials, employees, lobbyists, and candidates, and can give opinions to resolve conflicts or questionable behavior.
The commission also conducts ethics training. And we'll learn more now from the Miami-Dade Commission on Ethics and Public Trust's executive director. He's Joseph Centurino. Welcome back, Mr. Centurino. Good to have you.
Great to be here, Joe, and thank you for Joe and Bonnie for having us on.
It's our pleasure.
It's our pleasure. So just a little history. We have a lot to talk about, the Public Service Honor Code that's now up for a vote, but why was the commission created? Was it a series of events or a single event that spurred its creation?
The 90s weren't exactly the most calm period.
I know, but I just... Yeah.
Well, back then I was in the state attorney's office doing corruption work, and it was pretty well conceded that Miami-Dade was going through a tough period involving a number of scandals in the government, and this was part of the community's reaction to that spate of scandals, you know, in the hope that we could promote better government, more ethical government.
Just what powers does the commission have? Could you explain the process, how it works? You get an ethics complaint or a misconduct reported. What do you do? What are the repercussions and the penalties?
Well,
you could...
that's a good question, and a lot of people are not familiar with our procedures, but anybody can make a complaint. Anybody that wants to file a complaint regarding an ethics code matter can do so. We do enforce the Miami-Dade County Ethics Code, which frankly has been in existence for much longer than our agency. It was in existence for a long time and really was not enforced for the most part.
Was that part of the original charter, or was it added on?
No, it was added on. It's an ordinance, so it was added on as an ordinance. But it for many years it was just virtually ignored until they created a commission to actually enforce it.
So give us an example, not naming any names or anything. Just give us an example a recent success of the commission.
All right. Well, I mean, we have taken action in cases involving the Citizens' Bill of Rights, for instance, which is part of our charter, and it's also enforceable by us. And you may have heard recently that the mayor of Hialeah was found guilty after a hearing for having basically given false information out about personal investments. He had made some statements to the public, and turns out that they were not correct. And whereas a criminal justice agency could never touch that, because those aren't statements under oath, because we are an ethics enforcement agency, we actually were able to take action to impose fines, to impose a public reprimand in that case. And we fill, I think, an important area between the administrative process and the criminal process, where, you know, elected or appointed officials may do things that are really, really highly inappropriate, but there is really no consequence for them, but for the fact that there may be some ethics violation involved.
Are campaign finance violations probably the most prolific?
Well, we do have what we call an ethical campaign ordinance that does apply to all elected officials, but it doesn't really specifically deal with campaign finance. It it really deals more with truth telling and basically not damaging the property or the political signs and so forth of other candidates. If there is a campaign finance issue, we will look into it, and it's the Florida Elections Commission that enforces the state campaign finance.
But that's not untruth, say, in speeches or advertising, is it?
Right. That's the campaign finance issues where you're talking about, you know, limitations on contributions or, you know, any kind of falsifications going on in their campaign finance reports. That might, if it's serious enough, could go to the state attorney as a criminal matter, or we may file it with the State Elections Commission, which, like us, has non-criminal enforcement powers.
Before we begin talking about the Honor Code resolution, I'd just like to also make clear that the commission doesn't prosecute criminal cases. That
right.
still is under the purview of the state attorney's office.
That's correct. But two important things to note. We do get involved in criminal investigations. In fact, there have been a number of cases that have been brought criminally that originated in the Ethics Commission. For instance, the mayor of Homestead, who was convicted and sentenced within the last couple of years, that case was investigated by our investigators. And what we'll do sometimes is we'll look at it. Is it an ethics matter? Well, it could be, but it also could be criminal. When it could be criminal, we'll connect with the state attorney or with the law enforcement community, and we'll do a joint investigation. And that that case ended up going to a criminal
trial. How many investigators do you have?
We have six investigators, including a forensic accountant, and they're from a variety of backgrounds. We've had very good luck with news reporters or investigative reporters who are on our staff.
Are you satisfied with the powers that the commission has, or would you want to see them expanded?
You know, people always are concerned that we don't seem to have a lot of power to impose significant penalties. Mm-hmm. We do have, you know, we can impose either a $500 fine or $1,000 fine per count. If it's $1,000, if it's intentional, we can, you know, impose costs. We can impose reprimands and instructions, but we don't have criminal enforcement powers, which we shouldn't have. I mean, that's really for the state attorney to do. Certainly, there are times when we'd like to impose a stiffer fine when a ethics violation is particularly serious, and there, you know, we would like to expand our jurisdiction on occasion, and we have because there are some things that seem that they should be under our code, but they just don't fall there.
So we have this public service honor code for Miami-Dade County's elected officials and employees. Tell us what it is and who sponsored it and where it stands.
Well, this originated with the Commission on Ethics about a year and a half ago, actually. The Commission on Ethics passed a resolution suggesting that the county adopt an honor code for county officials and county employees that would essentially make it a requirement that they be actively monitoring the county for improper activities and to cooperate with law enforcement, but significantly to make reports to law enforcement or to the proper authorities when there is criminal activity or serious ethical misconduct going on, something that, frankly, I think was needed in the county. Because it's for many years, I think we just haven't seen that kind of culture within the county, and not unusual in local governments either, that people don't want to come forward to report things.
Well, if I work at County Hall, how will that affect me?
Well, basically, it creates a formal process whereby you'll be required if you see somebody, you know, taking a bribe, or you see somebody stealing county equipment or resources, or engaging in that kind of activity, you're going to be required to do something. You can't simply say, "Hey, you know, it's not my business, you know, it's somebody else's is doing wrong. And, you know, I think the idea that, that every public servant is should be a steward of the public interest is what we're trying to get across here. And I should mention that Commissioner Rebecca Sosa has sponsored this in the county commission for us, and we're very grateful to her because she's really been a great supporter of ethics over the years.
I'm just wondering if, you know, because it means that employees or officials are reporting violations by others with whom they work, couldn't there be repercussions for the reporting party?
That's always a concern. You know, there is in this policy a provision for protection of employees, stating that nobody should be penalized for making a report and abiding by the honor code. We also have in the county a whistleblower ordinance where people who are involved in whistleblowing can get legal protection. But that's always a I didn't hear that.
Sorry. No, go ahead.
Oh, I mean, that's I think it's an important concept to create so that county government begins to monitor itself and begins to become more self-responsive to the public interest.
So how effective is that whistleblower ordinance or this not being having repercussions if somebody does report? Mm-hmm. I mean, in theory, I understand it, but in practice, mm-hmm. does it work?
Well, there have been very few cases involving people who have actually qualified as whistleblowers, and there's been an attempt recently to beef that up. Really, it's not. You know, I'll tell you, the purpose behind this honor code, though, is not so much that we're going to expect a lot of people coming forward as tomorrow, as if it gets passed, but it's going to change the attitudes within the government, change people, make people more concerned that they're required to be vigilant and to monitor what's going on them. And we're going to make this part of our county ethics training program. So it's not just going to be something that's passed and put on the shelf. We're hoping to make this an active part of our day-to-day training and to impart this to ethics officers throughout the county so that when people come to work for the county, they're made to understand that they have special responsibilities to the public. It's not just another job.
I read that this is largely a revival of an ignored 1964 county administrative order. So if it was ignored in 1964, what's going to make them abide by it in 2015?
Well, it's glad that you mentioned. Yeah, we did in doing the research for this. We did find this old order back in 64, way back when we had a county manager then. And it was just a different era, and there was an order that people had a responsibility to report crime to the state attorney and so forth. And I think it's. I don't think anybody really remembered that it was there, and I doubt that it was, really talked about or enforced to any extent at all. We put that into this, but we also added other provisions and made it a much more formalized process with repercussions and with protections and so forth. So by making it part of our training. And by making it much more visible, there was no ethics commission in 1964 right. that did ethics training. So now it's going to be part of the ethical construct, I guess you could say, in the county, and something that I think every employee that comes into work for the county will know about this and will understand the special responsibility that it brings.
We're speaking with the executive director of the Miami-Dade Commission on Ethics and Public Trust, Joe Centorino, and we're going to take a short break. If you'd like to join in the conversation with him, if you have questions for him, our number 1-800-743-9576, 1-800-743-9576. We'll be right back.
And we're back. It is today's Topical Currents. Joseph Cooper, Bonnie Berman. Our topic on this part of the hour, the Miami-Dade Commission on Ethics and Public Trust. We're visiting with its executive director, Joseph Centorino. Also, Miami-Dade County citizens, let's give out the hotline for the Miami-Dade Commission on Ethics and Public Trust. That's 786-314-9560. Perhaps you would need to be a whistleblower. 786-314-9560.
And I see your website is ethics.miamidade.gov.
Yes, correct. It is. We have a website that has a lot of information, I think, that the public would be interested in.
Justice Santorino, so that people can get a little more idea of how the commission works, could you run us down basically what happened in the Bal Harbour commissioner and his relationship with the Neiman Marcus as an employee and a commissioner, mm-hmm. and just how the Ethics Commission ruled and straightened that out?
Well, a good and representative example of what we do in another phase of our office. In addition to enforcement, we do outreach and we give opinions to any elected official or any public servant in the county regarding an ethical matter. Now, what happened in Bal Harbour, there was a member of the commission there who happened to be...
Or any municipality.
Yeah,
also.
To be employed at Neiman Marcus, which was going to be affected by a major zoning issue there. And the question was, well, you know, does somebody who works for a company like that might be affected, do they have a conflict of interest? And so the question was asked, and the commission did say, yes, you have a conflict of interest, and, provided that guidance in advance so that that official, understood their ethical responsibilities and didn't get into a situation where they may have violated the code.
I want to get back to the honor code just for a minute, because you have this final vote on October 6th. The Miami-Dade Board of County Commissioners takes the final vote on October 6th for this honor code. So where does it stand and what has to happen now for it to pass?
Well, there are actually three pieces of legislation involved here. There's a resolution that the commission will hopefully pass that will call for the for the implementation of an honor code. There is an implementing order, which is an administrative act that then will spell out the honor code and the manner in which it will be enforced and carried out. There's also an ordinance change, because the implementing order would cover all of those people who are under the authority of the mayor, since it's administrative policy. But it would also subject the county commissioners themselves, elected officials, to the honor code. And that would, of course, come under the Ethics Commission to enforce that end.
So then October 6th is?
Then what's happened is it went to a committee, the so-called SPAGO committee, it's called, and it did pass the committee unanimously. And it will go, I believe, it's expected to go before the full commission on October 6th. We're hoping that it will pass and that we can then begin to train and begin to make this policy known to the people that work for the county.
One of the facets we haven't touched on, Mr. Santorino, is the ethics training sessions you provide for employees in the county and also the municipalities.
We do. We in the county, particularly, the county has a ordinance that was passed not that long ago, actually. I think within the last 3 years or so, that does call for all county employees to get ethics training. We put out a 3-hour video that basically is the training program online, and all county, all 20,000 plus members have gone through that. They will now, in a short time, have to go through a refresher course. So this has become part of the county's procedures. We also, go out to the municipalities, and we do ethics training upon request. We also have imposed its own requirement on the municipalities that their elected officials get ethics training. So we do that regularly also.
Bonnie, you have word about some of
Yes, I see that you have your fourth annual Ethical Governance Day. That's on October 22nd. I think it's from 7:30 to 2:30, 7:30 a.m., 2:30 p.m. So tell us what that is and what you're trying to accomplish.
Well, that's something we started 4 years ago. This is the fourth year we've done it. And it's an attempt to really get out into the community. And we have, of course, part of our job is to educate the community, to be doing outreach throughout the community on ethics issues. And we decided to get the schools involved, and the school board, Ms. Hantman, sponsored the resolution there, and she has every year, for the schools to have a day dedicated for Ethical Governance Day, which means that we're going to have probably 200 to 300 community leaders, including many attorneys, some judges, civic leaders go out into classrooms throughout the county to speak about the importance of civic involvement, civic engagement, civic education, and to try to inspire our next generation of voters into being a little more actively involved in the community to promote ethical governance.
Of course, many will perhaps criticize and say, oh, they don't have enough teeth in the Ethics Commission. But touch a little bit on the chilling effect that the commission has, in that perhaps just because it's there, that maybe people won't be quite so brazen.
Well, I'd like to say that. And I will tell you that even though we don't have criminal enforcement powers, when we get involved in a complaint against an elected official, and remember, an elected official, the public perception is everything to them. I mean, they're in office because of public approval. They stay in office, or they go to a higher office because they have public support. They're very concerned about their public image, and they're, you know, they vigorously defend sometimes against these complaints. But I think it does provide, at least when they get into this ethics area, they understand that, wait a minute, maybe you better think about something before they do it, because it's going to create what would be considered, you know, a public relations issue at the very least.
Are you still looking for speakers or participants for the Governance Day?
We always are, yes. I think we have close to 150, but we can use another 100 probably. So we're hoping that people go on our website. There's a form there. They can fill out and email it to us or fax it to us, or they can call the Ethics Commission, and we'll tell them about the program. We'll make sure that they get signed up, and we'll try to arrange for people to go to a school that they feel comfortable going to. And we hope to cover every single 12th grade civics classroom in the county.
I just have one more question about the honor code. Aren't people sometimes afraid to report their coworkers or their officials or people with, you know,
Without question, that is always a major problem in terms of getting information. And I can tell you, as a former prosecutor, that you'd find a case where somebody had stolen, $500,000, let's say, and there's people that work in the same department that presumably they should have known something funny was going on. Right. But people tend to look the other way. Well, the idea behind the honor code really is to make people understand, no, it's part of your job to be the public surrogate, to look out for the public. It's, you're not just there to do in a narrow way whatever job duties are assigned to you. You're there to protect the public, and you're being paid by the public. So your first loyalty ought to be to the public, not to a supervisor, not to a friend, but to the public. I understand how that's not an easy thing for some people.
Right.
But with the right training and the right reinforcement, we can, I think, begin to change that mindset.
Let's squeeze in a phone call, because we're getting kind of close to the end of our segment. This is Michael in Palmetto. Hi there.
Hi, good afternoon. I just was calling in to applaud Joe on his efforts and the commission's efforts. I was the lobbyist that went undercover with the FBI a couple years ago and led to the arrest of some corrupt elected officials. And so what I found, though, and without going into it, is that in my dealings, what we really need to do is give Joe and his group the teeth to really hand out penalties that mean something. In addition, I think we really need to give the judges more ability to do that as well and not be so weak. And then the last suggestion I'll make, and I've talked to Joe and others about this, is to really look at the lobbyist regulations and really tighten them up quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And lastly, I'll just throw in the comment, I think that it's everybody's responsibility as citizens of the county and of the United States to really stand up and speak out. So I'm hoping that this honor code allows them to do that. And again, I applaud Joe for you and your group's efforts.
Okay, thank you for your call.
Joe? Any comment?
No, I appreciate that. And what he said about the lobbyists, we do conduct lobbyist training. We're one of the very few places in the country, I think, that lobbyists are required to go through ethics training before they can assume lobbying in the county.
How common are these ethics commissions around the United States?
Well, local ethics commissions like Miami-Dade County are not very prevalent at all. There's, a lot of the states have these, have statewide, as Florida does too. Florida has a statewide commission, and they do the best they can. But with a limited budget and personnel. How do they cover the whole state of Florida, really? They're up in Tallahassee, and I think that what's happened is because of the importance of this issue in this county, we have our own operation, which has become a model for other places. Palm Beach County, for instance, has adopted an ethics commission modeled largely after our own. But the only other one in the state of Florida right now is in Jacksonville. So there's only three commissions.
We certainly want to thank you for coming on our program, Justice Santorino.
He's the executive director of the Miami-Dade Commission on Ethics and Public Trust. And again, it's ethics.miamidade.gov. And they are still looking for speakers for their fourth annual Ethical Governance Day, which is Thursday, October 22nd. We want to thank you so much for being with us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Food and Dining up next.
Welcome back to today's Topical Currents. Bonnie Berman with Joseph Cooper.
Finally, it's Thursday, Bonnie.
Thursday, we know what that means.
Food and Dining.
South Florida football fans have entered the new seasons with a good start. Both the Dolphins and University of Miami won their first games. Of course, it is a long season.
It is a long season.
But no matter how the games go, serving great food is a priority. Linda Gassenheimer is here, chef, author, syndicated columnist, and our friend. And it's her annual football tailgating program, which includes not only what's served in the parking lot, but at home as well. Welcome,
hi,
Linda.
Nice to be with you, Bonnie. Yeah, there are a lot of home games. There's a lot of away games this season,
right,
for them. Anyway, football season, as you said, in full swing. Tailgating is the second national pastime to football, right? Okay. I have friends who arrive at the game at 9 a.m. for 1:15 kickoff, just when the gates open. They have grills, portable refrigerators, lots of food, and the parking lot gets filled right away. So what's a football game without tailgating, even when we're watching at home? Here to give us some great tailgate party information is a chef, Dennis LaBelle. He's a chef at the Standard Hotel in Miami, and he's a major tailgater. He's even here with his dolphin hat on. Welcome, Chef Dennis LaBelle.
And it's the new version with the sun behind it, yeah.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you with us. And, of course, we'd love to hear from you, our listeners. What's your favorite tailgating food, or do you maybe have some questions for Chef Dennis? Give us a call. That's 800-743-9576, 800-743-WLRN. And Bonnie, we don't have any?
Don't have email today.
Email today. So you're going to have to call in and give us your information. Also with us, of course, is our favorite wine guy, Fred Tasker. He's joining us by Skype. You can read Fred's wine suggestions for my Dinner in Minutes columns that's in the Miami Herald. And also, his wine column is now on Saturdays in the Saturday Herald. Fred, what are we drinking for tailgate party? I think I have an idea.
Well, the big question is the proper beverage for a tailgate party wine or beer? And we will discuss that among ourselves.
Everyone here is smiling. We kind of have an idea about this, Fred.
Yeah,
now,
Fred,
don't take me for granted.
Your reputation precedes you.
I suppose.
Okay, Chef Dennis LaBelle, what do you take to the field when you're going on a tailgate party?
What I like to take is, I like to keep things very simple. And a lot of times people tend to go a little extreme when they tailgate. And I've learned in the past that when you do go extreme at the end of the game, you do have to clean everything up afterwards as well. So I tend to stick to smaller plates, smaller appetizers, so people can pick and choose what they would like to eat as we're doing our before game rituals, such as throwing the ball around, playing dominoes, stuff like that.
That's the important part. Yes.
What does it mean to go extreme?
Some people will go a lot of times during Thanksgiving games. I see a lot of people with the big pots full of oil and deep frying whole turkeys.
Right there at the field. Yes.
You have to have the fire department.
And, yes. And all the cars nearby.
Absolutely. And I haven't seen any mistakes or any incidents happen yet, and they're very good because the turkeys cook within 40 minutes.
Now, it's hotter than Hades out at that field.
Yes.
For tailgating, and you've got a great idea there because mm-hmm. I see you have frozen green grapes.
Absolutely.
That would be nice and
well,
cool.
Let's talk about mm-hmm. what he's brought.
What do the grapes have on them?
The grapes are just tossed with a little bit of powdered sugar and just to make them a little bit sweet. Now,
could you push that over to me a
absolutely.
Little bit?
Absolutely.
Well, I don't know. Do you think he deserves this?
All right.
But I've done the frozen grapes, and there's a lot of things you can do.
Why do you bring them frozen? I mean, they're going to go into this hot field.
Well, I like to bring them frozen because it's very refreshing.
Because it's hot,
Linda. When they're really cold, it's almost like...
But how do you keep it frozen between your home and the field and getting there?
Well, a lot of times it's easier if you just pack them in ice. I put them in Ziploc bags and pack them in ice, and you put a little salt on the ice, which kind of holds it a little firmer, and they'll stay frozen up to about 2 or 3 hours
say
after
that
I
again?
Leave the house.
You put salt on the ice?
Yeah, a little salt on the ice to kind of hold it solid. It keeps it from melting quite as quickly.
Oh, that's a good tip. Yes.
But always double wrap the grapes because you don't want the salt to get in with the grapes.
Okay. And you gave me another tip about mm-hmm. what you do with these grapes afterwards. What was it?
Well,
Fred, are you listening?
after the game, we a lot of times we have, we eat them as we're throwing the ball around because it's hot and everything. And then by the time the game ends, obviously they're thawed out. One cool thing you could do with it that we've done in the past is you just kind of smash them up and add a little vodka to it.
Oh.
And especially if the Dolphins win, which I expect to see a lot of wins this year, but and you kind of do a little shot, you know, obviously not the designated driver, but.
Well, they're batting 1,000 so far.
Oh, yes, yes.
There you go.
Undefeated. They'll take care of Jackson.
Fred, yes. You think that sounds good?
I do indeed.
Okay. Well, he's also got a big, huge platter here of sliders. So what's on that?
Yes,
what's
I have in some there? Interest in that platter.
We'll try to pass it to you, Jim.
Well, what I did is I kind of took a take off of chicken wings with a slight healthier side. I like to kind of keep it a little healthier because you are in the heat, and if you really get thick food or very fatty foods, it tends to slow you down during the game, and we need you to be
loud.
Need
your energy.
Yes. Yeah, right. But what I did was I marinated some chicken breast in buffalo wing sauce, marinated it overnight, and then simply cooked it off in a pan with all the juices and everything. I made a carrot and celery slaw with a little purple kale and a little cilantro to kind of give a fresh, bright flavor to it.
You shouldn't have told Joe about the kale because I think he might think
it's
too healthy.
No, I want
it's
too healthy. Those things look tremendous.
Oh. Now, let me ask you about the – is that mayonnaise?
No, it isn't. It is a goat cheese spread that I make. I'm not a big fan of blue cheese myself, so I got an aged goat cheese and made kind of a spread to give that kind of aged cheese flavor to
the
dish.
How did you make it liquid? What did you add to it?
What I did was I just put it in, I whisked it up with a little bit of heavy cream, not a lot, but a little bit of heavy cream and just a touch of lemon juice, salt and pepper.
Great.
Wow.
Very simple.
And what he did is he did what he came to the station the way he goes to the game. He mm-hmm. came with just a backpack and a couple of bags.
Yeah, I saw that. I thought, where's the food?
Right, and he just put it all together. So what he was telling me is that that's what he does at the game is you get prepare it at home for a little bit first.
Absolutely.
How do you get off work the nights and days of the game?
That's a very long story because I do work in the restaurant business, but I simply told my boss that I have season tickets and I'm only asking for 8 Sundays off a year.
All right. That's okay. A
good so first things it. First. Yeah. Great. So now you told me you don't always take the same foods all the time. How do you decide what you're taking?
A lot of times we do like to theme things for the game to kind of keep it interesting and make it fun every week. For instance, if we're playing Buffalo, we'll maybe do like Buffalo burgers or, if we're playing the Jets, I can't say.
You can't say what you do for the Jets. Okay.
A lot of it is very bad. But
what about New England?
New England. A lot of Samuel Adams.
Okay.
That's about as far as we go with New England. Yes. We don't just theme for the teams. We also theme for that time of the year. If it is a Thanksgiving Day, Thanksgiving game, sometimes we'll roast a turkey and cut it up at home, and then we'll just bring it in so it's very simple to eat. Also, coming around to Christmas time, hopefully if we get a little bit of chill in the air, we'll do a lot of hot ciders and stuff like that, just to kind of...
He's concentrated on the drinks first, so and then we get the food.
Right.
Yeah,
well,
so doing the turkey at home, though, you're not the idiot out there trying to fry a turkey after 10 beers.
No, I don't know if I'd call them idiots, because it really comes out good, but it is very dangerous. And what do you do with the oil afterwards?
Right.
You know?
Well, that's the other question. Yeah. I have so many people
can't carry hot oil home.
No. Well, but they come with a grill. Mm-hmm. And they're barbecuing. They've got hot coals. Mm-hmm. So how do you take that home? What do you do? Just dump the coals on the ground? I mean, what do you do?
I have seen people do that. If you are using hot coals, just it's very good to be prepared on time to obviously light them early, and hopefully they will burn out in time. But if not, it's always good to bring a metal bucket, or if you do have some sort of steel container, to put the coals in. Because, of course, if you do put the hot coals in your car when you go into the game... Bad things can happen. It could catch fire, and it could, you know, which none of us want to see.
No. So that's, and now, so what are your tips, some tips on transporting the food from your home to keep it safe? Because as Joe said, it's pretty hot here.
Yes, absolutely. When you do bring things, always have a separate cooler just for your food, simply because you don't want to cross-contaminate any of the food with the ice you're using to prepare drinks. But just the kind of cooler you purchase, buy a cooler that obviously will hold the ice longer and hold the cold better. And just make sure everything's under the ice before you go into the game. We did have an instance one year, many years ago. I have a friend of mine that made this cauliflower casserole that was out of this world phenomenal. And we ate it, and there was a little bit left over. Of course, after the game, we come out. And we want to eat it again. And she never put it in the ice or anything. Uh-oh. And nobody got sick or anything. But
not a good idea.
It's not safe to say that it was fun in the morning.
Salmonella.
It gets very dangerous. So you just be conscious about keeping the food cold. Because when you do leave the game, you're going to be hungry again. You were jumping around, running around, cheering. You know.
And I think it's a good idea. That's a very good tip, is to separate things so that you don't get cross contamination. Mm-hmm. I don't think we don't think about that.
No.
And to put things back in a cooler when you go off to watch the game.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Right. Okay, well, we're going to take a short break here. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking about, well, can you guess, tailgate parties with Chef Dennis LaBelle. He's a chef at the Standard Hotel, and we'll take a short break and be back with more. We're back. I'm Linda Gassenheimer, and we're talking with Chef Dennis LaBelle. He's a chef at the Standard Hotel on the Causeway, Venetian Causeway.
Venetian Causeway.
And he's been giving us tailgating tips for the game and also been feeding us with some wonderful food. But right now, talking about food, it's Dinner in Minutes time. So this Dinner in Minutes is a quick and easy tailgate dish. And it's a change from the traditional hot dogs. It's a grilled turkey sausage with a tomato, onion, pepper topping, and quick coleslaw. And Fred and Joe, when I was talking to Fred Tasker about this, he thought you might be upset about this turkey sausage.
I was thinking that, yeah.
Yes?
Well,
I know I am.
Whatever.
So
I'm worn down.
Okay, good. You saute some tomatoes, onions, and peppers just for about 5 minutes, and you can make this well in advance and warm it up just before you're serving it. And then you grill the sausages. You toast some hot dog buns, and you serve the vegetables and the turkey sausage on top, or whatever kind of sausage you want. But it's the topping that really makes a difference. You can make your own coleslaw. It only takes minutes because you can already buy a bag of shredded cabbage. Some of them have carrots in it as well. And I mix together some mayonnaise, some vinegar, some mustard, and just a little touch of sugar, maybe some onion, and let it rest for a little bit. It can be made a day ahead. Real simple and easy. Complete recipe for even when you're not tailgating. It's a real simple recipe. The photo and the whole recipe is at dinnerinminutes.com. And please follow me on Twitter. That's at L. Gassenheimer. Okay, Fred, now tell us, what are we going to drink for this tailgate party?
Well, at the start of every football tailgating season, I resume my chronic crusade to persuade fans that wine, good old wine, is a far more manly or womanly drink than beer for football tailgating. a big hearty Syrah or succulent Chardonnay instead of those wimpy, flavorless light beers they advertise on TV during the games. It only leaves the question then of what wine goes with what tailgate food. So here goes. Burgers and steaks are red meat, of course, so they go well with big red wines such as Cabernet Sauvignon, Syrah, Italian Barolo, or Spanish Rioja. Chicken and fish are white meat, so they're matched nicely with Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Grigio, and other white wines. And a hot dog, well, as we see, you're never quite sure what's in a hot dog. Could even be turkey. Although I'm in northern deer hunting territory, so we make our hot dogs out of venison here, and that is a really toothsome dish.
Wait, do you catch the venison yourself?
Catch it,
shoot it, whatever. Whatever.
No, I have a nephew who is a bow hunter, and he fills me in with all the hot dogs I can use.
With a bow?
I can't see Fred in a deer blind.
You never know. Although, now, Jimmy Buffett's restaurant in Key West used to have a special. You would get a blackened hot dog and a bottle of Dom Perignon for $101.
I was wondering if you were going to come up with the bubbly, Fred.
Yes.
Well, I always do. I know that you're expecting me to recommend champagne with something.
Okay.
And I don't want to disappoint you, so I'll say this. You can serve ice-cold bubbly with any of the above dishes without being culinarily incorrect, because I guess you could call bubbly the all-purpose linebacker of wines. Spicy foods, jalapeno poppers, buffaloing.
All-purpose linebacker of wines.
Yeah,
I just couldn't go over and let you go through that.
Inspire you to go out and get a bottle of bubbly.
The journeyman linebacker played for five teams.
No, that's not good enough. It's got to be all-purpose. Anyway, spicy foods: jalapeno poppers, buffalo wings, five alarm chili, that sort of thing. Need a spicy wine. It's so spicy and so fruity, it almost tastes sweet. And this would be maybe a nice, hearty, spicy red Zinfandel.
The chef here is nodding his head. I don't know if he's nodding his head because he's upset about the wine or what.
I'm just waiting. I was wondering why he was leaving out sangria, which is also a nice thing to drink when you're out in the heat.
And can be spicy.
You know, that would have the sweetness to go with spicy food, too. So that's not a bad idea. And you put it over ice sometimes, so it's nice and cold, which is certainly good in Florida.
Absolutely.
Now, here's a practical tip. If you're tailgating in the stadium parking lot, don't try to drive home immediately after the game. You'll just sit there idling and wasting gas in the gridlock. So what you do, you go back to your car and have a post-game tailgate party to kill an hour or so and let the traffic die down. And here's where you might want to pop a bottle of bubbly and relax, because even if you leave an hour later, you'll get home just as soon with a lot less hassle. And of course, at this point, you have to draw straws to see who has the honor of becoming the thirsty, coffee-sipping, thoroughly self-sacrificing hero of the hour, the designated driver.
Thank you, Fred Tusker. Chef Dennis Lavelle, so what do you drink at the tailgate parties?
It all depends on the time of the game. Obviously, Monday Night Football gets a little crazier. I have my friend Jack Daniels with me.
Okay.
But during the 1 o'clock games, it's a little hard to drink that at 9:30 in the morning. So usually during the 1 o'clock games, we'll just have a couple beers. But when we get into the night games and the 4 o'clock games, that's when we'll start playing around with some lemonades and cocktails. And, you know, also when we theme the food, we also theme the drinks as well.
Okay. So, Joe, do you do tailgating food?
Only on my sofa.
what do you make? Since you're always telling me,
he makes couch potatoes.
I like
he makes couch potatoes.
I can tell you what he makes.
Yes, go.
Pork.
No.
Yes.
In one form or another.
The last time I think I did this, I had apple smoked bacon wrapped shrimp.
There you go.
You made this yourself, sauce and broiled. Yeah.
You did. Yeah. See, he's always telling us about these things, but he never really brings them in, Bonnie.
I know. And when he does, he just keeps them to himself.
Oh, yes, of course.
But he wants us to share, right? Fred Tusker, what do you make besides drinking your wine for your tailgating?
Well, the popular thing up here is bratwurst.
Of course. And, up here, being in Michigan, we have to tell people where you are.
Yeah, I'm in Michigan. In fact, I went to the Michigan State Oregon game last weekend and saw the tailgating. And I swear, tailgating is so popular that there were thousands and thousands of people, far more than could ever fit in the stadium. So I think a lot of them are not even planning to go to the game. They just come out for the atmosphere.
Now, Fred, with all your years in Miami, you're not a Detroit Lions fan, are you?
Well, I try to be, but they were kind of disappointing last weekend. I still root a little bit for the Dolphins.
A little bit?
A little bit. Should.
Well, listen, we've got a chef here with his dolphin hat on, and he's a good he's a really a good fan.
Absolutely.
Win or lose, he's
win
there.
Win or lose.
Yes, and
win
so is lose. My husband at every game. Win or lose, he's there.
The Dolphins and the Hurricanes.
Oh, you go to both.
We haven't mentioned that.
Absolutely.
They're playing Nebraska this Saturday.
Yes, it's a very big game this Saturday.
Now, Linda, are you a Dolphins fan or a Patriots fan? You better
or
not.
Or Tom Brady
is that
fan.
A loaded question, Bonnie, friend?
I guess take the fifth. Don't answer.
Okay. What, because I'm from New England?
Yes.
Well, yes. Whatever.
Okay.
I do go to Dolphin games, though.
Okay.
All right.
The Dolphins don't cheat.
Now.
I'm sorry.
And don't spy.
Absolutely.
Now.
We haven't got anything proven here, so
exactly.
So we're
thank
not
going
to. Yes, thank you very much. Now let's get to my favorite part of the meal because we haven't gotten there yet, and that's dessert. What are we having for dessert at our tailgate, or is it just going to be the beer?
Well, like I said, I like to bring the frozen grapes. Obviously, a lot of things for dessert while you're tailgating. Keep them small. Don't make big cakes. Don't make big dessert ensembles. Try to keep things down to like a cupcake size, smaller portions of stuff, because people tend to not want to indulge so much after a game, after being in the heat all day. But it is nice to have little bites and stuff like that, because everybody likes a little bit of sweetness.
And Dennis, do you ever see people drinking coffee after the game so they can get home?
I cannot say that I have. I have seen a lot of people drinking water, lots of water, and dumping it over their head, but I haven't seen a lot of coffee, to be honest with you. I wouldn't know how to keep it hot.
So if you see the going home rush hour, you might want to avoid it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I do exactly what you suggested. I sit down and I relax and I have a post-game celebration.
Okay. So now we just have about a minute left. Mm-hmm. You have a toolbox that you take that you always have in the car ready to go? I mean, of kitchen equipment or things that you need?
It's kind of a mix of everything. Obviously, don't forget a lighter. That's the one thing that a lot of people go, they'll be get everything ready and they can't light the grill. Don't forget your lighter. Don't forget your bottle opener. And
or in Fred's case, your wine.
Or your wine key as well. Right. Absolutely. And just mostly what I bring is sanitizer, soaps, and I always tell a lot of people, bring an extra gallon of water because there's no way to wash your hands or clean up, and not necessarily because you're touching other people's food, obviously that for a reason, but nobody wants to have sticky hands while they're tailgating.
So yeah, those grapes are a little sticky.
Paper towel roll, too.
Paper towel, a little hand sanitizer, and an extra gallon of water just to kind of wash your hands.
We're almost out of time, okay. But also a big black bag.
Yes.
Clean up after yourself.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay.
Absolutely.
It's been a really, really tasty week. Chef Dennis LaBelle, thank you for joining us and for the delicious food.
And thank you so much for having me.
He's a chef at the Standard Hotel on the Venetian Causeway. Well, next week we'll be talking with author Anne Willen. She's the founder of La Varenne Cooking School in France, and she's going to give us secrets to essential recipes everyone should know about. Nice to be with you, Joe and Bonnie, and thank you, Fred. Fred Tasker. Thank you,
and thanks, Dennis, and thanks, Fred.
It's my pleasure.
And that wraps up this hour. Our producer is Richard Ives. Technical supervision by online producer Paul Leary. We have free audio archives and downloads at our website, wlrn.org. More information, including pics and links, at the Topical Currents Facebook page. Tomorrow at 1, it's the South Florida Arts Beat, a live music broadcast from our studio. Bonnie, who's playing?
I believe
it's 18-Wheelers.
The 18-Wheelers. That's with Christy Angelis.
Oh, yeah, that'll be good. Tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Monday's guest is attorney Reggie Garcia. He's a leading authority and practitioner of clemency, parole, work release, and pardon law in Florida. We'll learn the complex route traveled for a prisoner to return to society. Garcia's been doing the job for over 20 years. Joseph Cooper for Bonnie Berman, Linda Gassenheimer, Fred Tasker. Thanks for making Public Radio your companion today. Stay tuned for Here and Now, next from NPR News.